Welcome to Entrepreneur Eats, a conversation about business and community with a side of eats. My name is Deanna Smith, and I'm your host. I'm Deanna Smith, your host of Entrepreneur Eats, and today we have our mayor, Dane White. Hello, awesome. Mayor.
Thanks for having me back again.
Yes, I know. This is becoming a habit.
A good habit.
Yes, good habit. So much has happened since the last time we spoke. And more importantly, so much has happened this week.
Yes.
Tell me all about it.
Man, the thing this week with, I want to call it the Escondido Creek Trail encampment. I was told that the jungle is offensive. Either way, just so people know what I'm talking about. The encampment that was in the Escondido Creek Trail over by the Citricado Bridge. And I first became aware of this, I think 5 or 6 months into my tenure. Somebody sent me an email, and it was pictures of multiple fires in the Creek Trail. And they said, hey, there's this encampment here, and it's a big problem. I'm scared my home is going to get burnt down. So I went down there to look at it and was shocked at what I saw. And then since then, had been back 3 or 4 times, once with Congressman Peter Staff, I think Congressman Issa Staff, Jim Desmond Staff, looking for resources and ways to get this taken care of. You know, you got to find a place potentially for 100 people to go. The estimates I saw to professionally mitigate and fence it off were, you know, $2 to $3 million for each thing. And for a city like Escondido, we just don't have the resources to do anything about it, or we didn't anyways. And as time went on, I just felt like this was getting worse and worse and worse, and something had to be done. And I would love to take credit for what happened this week, but ultimately, you know, our city manager is the one that organized that entire thing. And when I was on the news, I said it this way. In some ways, Monday was a huge success, and in other ways, it was a complete failure. But on the success side, I think being able to pull together a dozen service providers in a week's notice, anybody who wanted shelter was able to receive it. Anybody who wanted, you know, addiction treatment, mental health services, whatever the case may be, they were offered. And to put that together in a week and have it executed almost seamlessly with, I think during the primary portion of that, there were no arrests, no citations. Again, all the services in the world offer. I think it was a huge success. And then yesterday and today, I've been down there for a couple hours with Love Esco and any of the other volunteers who came down to pick up trash. And I got a text on Tuesday afternoon from the fire chief or police chief or whoever it was, saying that Monday they pulled out 32 tons of trash.
Oh my gosh.
And Tuesday they were on track for 50 tons of trash. So you're talking about 200,000 pounds of trash.
So when you say that, to put in our mind, how many dumpsters is that?
I have no idea.
How many truckloads is that?
What's happening is, so Escondido has its own trash compactor, or a couple of them maybe. EDCO has been one of our best partners on this, and they're letting us have priority use of their facility. So we're just in and out all day long the past couple of days. And Monday, when I was down in there, when they were escorting people out, they had backhoes and tractors down there. Some of those structures I went in, I mean, those are permanent structures. They're not tents. They're permanent structures.
Can you describe one of those permanent structures?
Okay, so one of them, you had to walk down the bank. Mind you, this portion of the creek, it does not have the concrete channels. It is an actual creek. So you walk down the bank, and they had stolen bags of concrete and forms and a concrete mixer. And they had made a concrete path where the water would have been. And you go into the first unit, and it's framed with studs. You walk in, and there's a fire pit and recliners. And then you turn the corner, and then inside of this structure are tents lined up where people are living. Some of them were set up to be more of a living room. Others like a kitchen with a full stove, pots, pans, propane tanks. I mean, you name it. It is down there. And that was just one structure. There were dozens. You know, again, going back to the successes, when you look at the water quality testing that they did, it was absolutely not safe for humans to be down there. You're talking about 20 times the levels of, you know, what's considered safe, whatever that means, of this particular bacteria, but just absolutely horrendous living conditions.
So are there hundreds of people living in this environment?
between 50 and 100 at any given time.
Okay, so it was just like a little city.
If there happens to be children listening to this, I would caution parents to let them listen to this next portion. But when I was down there today picking up trash, endless needles, rolls and rolls and rolls of tinfoil that had been used to smoke whatever substance they were smoking, mm-hmm. bottles and bottles of urine and other stuff. It was just, like I said, it was horrendous. A few years ago, from my understanding, there was a woman who was mentally unwell and needed treatment. I don't know the particulars of her situation, but she became pregnant and had the baby down there, and the baby passed away. So, there's this portion of the city that's like, how cruel of you to go down there and make them leave. But I think if you were to go down there and see what I saw for yourself, you would know that it's terrible that we don't have a home for everybody, you know, every one of those people to go in. But if you saw what I saw, you would know that is, you just can't allow that to continue. And then on the flip side, part of, you know, one of the legitimate functions of government is to preserve the environment, protect the environment. And you're talking a years of restoration from what happened down there. Mm-hmm. You know, over a decade of people living down there and everything else that was going on, it is totally destroyed. And with that being one of the only natural resources that we have here in the city, I take tremendous responsibility in making sure that gets cleaned up.
Good. Thank you very much. That's such a big deal. So was there somebody in charge of all this organizing and construction?
You mean on the part of the people down there?
Yes.
So it was a hierarchy, from my understanding. The way EPD described it to me is, you know, there was a leader, maybe one on both sides of the actual creek. And oftentimes the women that stay down there, they get taken advantage of by the leader for protection. But I'm not sure if it was as organized as some might think, but to an extent it must have been.
Mm-hmm. Were there any children involved?
Man, that's the saddest part. There was clear evidence of kids being down there, mm-hmm. you know, strollers, yeah. stuffed animals, all that kind of stuff.
Wow. Well, I hope those children got some really serious help.
As do I. I haven't seen the after action report yet, but I will be interested to know if there were children down there when they were escorted out.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Do we have a list of people that were down there, or how do you track these people? Because if they didn't go get services, they must have gone somewhere. Where would they have gone? Is there a way to track them when they show up?
Since I've been in this position, the county has been talking about a by name list forever. Getting a by name list of all the people who are unhoused in the entire county. Right now, for North County, the San Diego Rescue Mission is trying to spearhead an effort to create a by-name list. But there's some challenges with that, because when a government agency or a healthcare agency does that, there are privacy laws that have to be followed. So it's a very tricky thing to navigate through. Our cops unit does know virtually every person on the streets in Escondido by name. But they're, you know, if you don't accept services and you walk away, there really isn't an effective way to track people and where they went, or, you know, their status in a week or a month or a year.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a plan for Escondido as far as tracking and making these lists and helping people get through all these horrible times?
Yeah. So the CEO of the San Diego Rescue Mission was in my office last week talking about this. And I told him I would love to be a part of a by name list. We don't know what that looks like yet. We're just in the initial stages of that process, but I will play a role in that. And for Escondido, I'm having this battle in my head, because I've said since campaigning, we need a shelter. And I still do believe we need a shelter, one that we pay for and we get to have the control over. But then I look at, 100 people were offered shelter. And I keep seeing different numbers, between 12 and 30 accepted shelter. The last thing in the world I want to do here is spend all this money for a resource that's not going to be utilized. But the shelter that was offered the other day was most likely temporary. And who knows what would have happened after that. I think people would be more receptive to something permanent that's in town. You know, so that's one of the debates we're going to have this year, as a matter of fact. Even before I knew this emergency proclamation was going to be adopted, I told the city manager that this year, especially now with Measure I passing, homelessness is number one priority. Mm-hmm. And that next step for us is a shelter.
And how would that shelter be different than Interfaith?
Yeah, so Interfaith is a regional asset. Mm-hmm. They take government money, and virtually anybody in the county can send their individuals there for services. For us, if we're going to spend money, my number one thing is we just need to target the people who are here now. We can't be bringing more people into the city when we've got, you know, 300 plus in Escondido. What I saw when I toured Huntington Beach's Navigation Center, which is just a fancy way of saying shelter, it was interesting because they have an encampment ban that is strictly enforced. But they have a place for those people to go. And what's different, I think, is the longer term aspect of it. Again, having the local control over it and being able to set the boundaries there. So Interfaith is governed by whoever they're governed by. We don't necessarily get to tell them how or what to do. I mean, we do in some sense with their conditional use permits and things like that. But with this, we get to set the rules entirely, which I think is a big difference.
What would those rules look like?
I think having, and let me say, I don't know what the rules are for Interfaith specifically, so this isn't to say they are or are not doing these things. Having some level of sobriety to be able to get in, having some sort of conditions on it. You need to be working towards sobriety or working towards, you know, fixing your mental health issues or working towards a job. Making sure that my primary thing is making sure people are pointed in a direction and they keep moving that way.
Agreed. Yes, they have to have something to work towards.
And I by the way, I think when people get to see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, they're far more likely to be heading in that direction. Whereas now, like, you know, what hope or what light is there if you're just roaming around on the sidewalk?
So you spoke a little bit about Measure I and how this impacted this particular event. Tell me more about Measure I and the passing of it and all of the money that will be collected for the tax.
Where do you want me to start?
Wherever you choose.
You know, in talking to the members of the community, I think people think that Measure I passed in November, the election is certified in December, and in January, we have $30 million to do whatever we want with. And so for me, it's kind of hard to be making long-term plans because, you know, I could be out of a job in 2 years. And we don't really start to see any of that money until June or July of this year. We still have $8 to $12 million budget deficit. So things are still going to be tight for us for a year or two. Beyond that, though, I think the opportunities are endless. One of the things I would be interested in doing is maybe a series of community surveys. We did one last year before Measure I was placed on the ballot, just to kind of see what the temperature was for different topics in the community. And I think I'd like to see us do that again to make sure the money is flowing in the right direction. That's really the only thing I care about is making sure the community gets a say and where they want the money to go. And then homelessness and parks and rec are my two big things.
Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit about the oversight committee that's forming.
I don't know if I'm the best person to ask. I don't know how many people are going to be on it, but from my understanding, the Police Officers Association gets an appointee, the Fire Association, the San Diego County Taxpayers Association, and then the City Council will appoint somebody from the business community at large and an alternate. Is there more than that? Do you know?
I believe that's it.
Okay.
Yeah. See, you know quite a bit.
Okay. But I've never participated in a committee like that. So my understanding is they'll be making recommendations to the city council. I'm not sure how often they'll meet or what else they'll do, but
I think there's about a 2-year term
for
each committee member. And there are requirements. You have to show up. If you are absent more than twice, you will be replaced. And I think there's another... I think that's it. Is that it? Something else? Another requirement? I am a little bit confused about the requirement to be a city resident because they don't have a vote and it's only you have to be a city resident in order to be on the committee. So I'm a little bit confused on that because you don't have a vote. So why does it matter that you live in the city or you live in the county of San Diego in Escondido?
I get that a lot, not just with the oversight committee, but in general, people live just outside of city limits. They're paying sales taxes here, but yet they don't get to decide who their mayor is, who their city council member is. And I don't know where that rule comes from. I would presume the state, because like I have to live in Escondido. I had to live in Escondido for the school board. So yeah, I don't know where that comes from mm-hmm. or how to change it.
Yeah, it seems a little bit unbalanced because there are all these people that live in the county that are on the outskirts. And actually, there's some weird pockets in Escondido and right in the middle of Escondido that are considered county.
My sister lives in one of them. And mm-hmm. The joke in my family, because half my family lives in the unincorporated area, so they're always reminding me that they did not vote for me. And it's, I think Escondido is unique. A lot of cities have unincorporated pockets, but the people who live in unincorporated Escondido, they consider themselves part of Escondido.
I definitely do. Yes. So tell me about long term for 2025 is going to go by really quick. What do you see for 2026?
But that's a good question. There are so many good things happening right now. Kelsey and I were at the mall last night. And I know it's Christmas time, so it's packed naturally. But almost every unit is full. With round one coming there, it's a total game changer. With phase two of the Grand Avenue Vision Project being completed next year, with Palomar Heights being completed next year, there's just so many good things happening. But long term, I think for me is figuring out the next step with our downtown. Phase two is going to be good. Phase three is going to be good. But what do we have to do to get more businesses and more foot traffic downtown mm-hmm. is going to be a primary focus.
Going into the holiday season, what are your plans and what are you doing?
Yeah, it's bittersweet this year. We are going to be spending time with my in-laws and with my mom and my dad. My dad will be moving to South Carolina. My in-laws are moving to Arizona. I feel like we have this long-standing legacy of, you know, this family history in Escondido, and everybody's moving away. So this is going to be the last holiday season where we get to see everybody, and we're going to enjoy it. But, it's just part of life. And yeah. I think it makes me think about what I'm going to do when I'm done here.
Yeah. Living in the moment is really important, and congratulations on keeping your family together. And it really is heartbreaking that they're going to move, but more places to visit.
Yeah. More places to visit, and I'm happy for them. Hey, look, I tried leaving a couple times, and I came back every time.
Yes, well, I've traveled quite a bit all over, and I'm always happy to come back to Escondido.
If there's one thing I could add before we close.
Of course.
Okay, so in particular with Measure I passing, and in this coming year, I was just telling somebody earlier this morning, one of my biggest frustrations is when the city council has workshops or we debate something in a city council meeting for months and months and months, and a decision is made, and then the emails come wondering, why did you do this? So my New Year's resolution for everyone else that I want you to adopt is get more involved. There's going to be a lot of your tax money coming into Escondido. How do you want it to be spent? Where do you want it to go? What do you want us to focus on? And if you don't engage and get yourself involved, it's a shame. You need to be a part of the process. I would encourage everybody, pay attention to the Planning Commission or the Public Art Commission or the Traffic and Safety Commission or the City Council meetings. Tune in just once a month and keep a pulse on what's going on. And when you don't like something, say something. If you think we're doing the right thing, say something. But we don't know unless you're engaged. And I would highly encourage everyone else to get more engaged this coming year.
That sounds like a great resolution.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.